It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo! South America! Australia! France! Germany! UK! Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, indeed. Here we go. We are off and running for this, the final broadcast of this second week of September 2018. It's the 14th day of September 2018, and this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, and that's where you go if you'd like to pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump into the Madcap Mary wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Yep, when you do, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Little Thunder. Others will be along presently. Those are the early arrivers. You'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed folded space to become Man Cave because it's beer, green bud, and salsa day in Northern California. Another 80-degree day and blue skies and no smoke and... Well, it seems as though Sparky is feeling right spunky over it all, and glad I am. It's a comfortable 79 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. It's not raining. It will be sometime soon. Looks like I'm going to be smoking in the rain. You know, I promised my neighbor that I would smoke a couple of shoulders for him over the weekend, so it looks like the weather goddess of irony has laid in a store of precipitation for me. Wait, the forecast has changed. I may actually get to do all that smoking in pleasant weather tomorrow. Yay, because last weekend was downright depressing. Just a deluge. And we need some dry out here because everything kind of squishes. And need to start planning toward getting those last few mowings in of the season. And need to run over and get some weed eater fuel for the weed eater and push it back a little bit more before we can't do that anymore. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the front porch on the Horn. And here in about 57 minutes or so, we will open up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. And you're welcome to participate. If you never have before, by golly, just fire up Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype. And Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail to the old hollow tree where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, around which we gather every Friday to discuss the various and sundry issues that are on people's minds at the end of the week. If you cannot handle Skype, we have one line that's just a plain old phone line. No, there's nothing plain old phone line about it. In point of fact, it's the stress line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, and it's up and running again, and we're happy to have it that way. And the number there, for here in about an hour or so, is area code 304-640-2829. The toll-free number also now rings into that number, which is 84 from anywhere, Canada, Mexico, or the United States. We'd love to hear from our Oaxaca contingent sometime, or perhaps maybe even, hey, how about hearing from our buddy in the far not quite yet frozen, I hope not, north up around the Northwest Territories, our buddy Christopher. The toll-free number is good for Canada, United States, and Mexico, and it is 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. Maybe jot that down just to keep it handy. But that we do have the one line there for folks who can't quite manage Skype. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, who definitely, based on the food porn that I photographic food porn evidence I have seen, has a real taco problem. Brother Deacon Asa says, "Hot on both streams, Senor Bob." Gracias, Senor Asa. And that's the extent of my bad Spanish. Yeah, Asa's got a taco problem. I have a bigger taco problem because I ain't got no taco truck. Every now and then, though, the gang over at the station in Fayetteville will do fish tacos for a lunch special. And when they do, whoa, they did some monkfish tacos that were just, well, it was a long time ago, and I'm still impressed. Sending out good thoughts and good wishes and big hopes for folks in the who have weathered and continue to weather Hurricane Florence. Sending out good thoughts and best wishes for folks dealing with craptastic weather in Hawaii. And you know what? Good thoughts and good hopes for everybody everywhere in the Horn Family Community Congregation, because in a world being changed and not for the good by climate change, sooner or later, everybody's going to deal with some aspect of it at some time. There is a little bit of good news. What had been Hurricane Isaac has weakened and gone a little south. It may nip the southern edge of Jamaica, but Puerto Rico has apparently gotten out of the line of that nightmare. The last I checked in on Hurricane Helene, which is still churning around off the west coast of the continent of Africa, it's apparently just going to spin out into the Atlantic and then move over and take its load of rain toward Europe. So, I guess that's a good thing. It's been a very dry European summer, by the way, so they could probably use a little. At least it's been dry in Central Europe. Brutally so. In Germany, I'm told. So where does... Yeah, fundraising. I wish I didn't have to mention this. And I wish I didn't have to mention this this way. Well, before that, the thank yous. We have thank yous to send out for our two subscribers on the 14th day of the month. That being Matt in San Francisco and our buddy Ralps. Thank you, Ralps. Thank you very, very kindly. And then thanks also go out here just a few hours ago to Catherine. Thank you, Catherine. Kicked in to help as well. Thank you very kindly, Catherine. And we have a brand new Patreon subscriber to thank. Let me call that up real quick. Thank you to Kat over at Patreon. And again, thanks earlier to our buddy Otto for becoming a Patreon subscriber earlier this week. And thank you to Frank, our buddy of longstanding Frank. So where does that leave us? Oh, good. Thank you for letting me know. Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy, says, I hope to be on the porch later if fate allows it and the crick don't rise. Don't rise, crick. Don't rise. So, Steve's making his recovery nicely. It's just a time-consuming process. But we'll be looking for you in the on the front porch there, Steve. Okay, so, yeah, fundraising. It's been a hard week. And I started tallying up what we hadn't done this week. And I'm just going to say we're just going to call the fundraising goal this week, or for the end of the week, $600. It's actually more. But it is, well... See, we came in with a $90 deficit on Monday, and we did a goose egg on Monday, and then we made up a little bit of it on Tuesday. But basically what it boils down to is something more than 3 days' worth of funding just is not there. So we'll just say that's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And that being the case, that equals 10 people at 60, 10 people at $60 or 60 people at $10 in terms of subscriptions, things like that. But the real world impact of it is not that I won't be able to afford my usual pound and a half of Ocetra caviar this week. You know, I like to sit in the Gulfstream 5 even when we're not flying around on it and just have a little Ocetra caviar, you know, a little sour cream, you know, on top of an off-brand Risk. I never buy Ritz, not Risk. I never buy name brand stuff. I buy the Kroger brand. Sometimes we sit under the umbrella at the table by the gigantic kidney-shaped pool here at the mansion. No, we don't. And there's no caviar in it. The bottom line is, we need to raise the $600 because the biggest part of that will go to the coal-fired power company as quickly as it comes in. It's no joke. We live really close to the bone here, and no, there aren't any lavish parties or. And it's the middle of the month, and sorry. So we are at $600 to close the week. And then there's one more week of fundraising, and then it's fundraising free radio for the end of September. September is blazing past us. So that's where we are. And all kidding aside, if we don't raise it, at some point in time, there will not be a program because the bills have to be paid. And I wish that I was just printing up my own and never had to mention this again. But I always say that because it's always true. So that's where it is. $600 to go. We can knock out the power bill and go into the final fundraising week of September in not quite as horrifying shape. Yeah, if we can do that. So that's where we stand. Hopefully we'll knock it down some. Let's see here. Respond to an email. All right, then. At 15 past the hour, what's on our mind? Well, there's the Manafort thing, of course. But I'd like to pick up kind of where we left off last night. Because I haven't heard an analysis, a dovetailed analysis of the impeachment clause and the 25th Amendment quite like what I put forward, frankly, anywhere. And I read a lot. Not to say I'm right or wrong on it, but I think I'm pretty close. I've got the analysis pretty close. But this does sort of intersect with the Manafort plea. You know, of course, that Paul Manafort, aged 69, looking at spending the rest of his natural born days as a guest in the federal gray bar bed and breakfast. Well, he decided he was going to plead out today. And along the way, he decided he would cooperate with the Mueller investigation. Yeah. The Mueller investigation, of course, is working on multiple fronts, and they really are way out in front on the chessboard, ahead of Julius Geiser and Rudy Giuliani and the rest of those sad sacks. Today was another one of those really bad, no good, terrible, horrible days for Donald J. Trump. And there just aren't going to be many more good ones. They're all behind him now. But he does still have his abiding friendship with lovable, huggable, snuggly, cuddly, wouldn't hurt a flea, but might very well poison a different bass player, namely the bass player for Pussy Riot, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. Trump will always, you know, it's a paraphrase of the line out of, well, you remember Casablanca. When Rick has reached his moment of truth, and he knows he has to send Ilsa off with Victor Laszlo, and his heart's breaking there on the tarmac of the airport, and the engines are starting on the plane that will head for Lisbon. And he looks at Ilsa, and he says, we'll always have Paris. That's my terrible Bogart impression. Well, you know, Donnie can look at Vlad, and Vlad can look deep into the eyes of Donnie and say, we will always have Helsinki. Yes. So what I got to thinking about after going into detail of just what a convoluted mess the 25th Amendment is. It's a bigger mess than impeachment is. Because you got to have a 2/3 vote in both the House and the Senate. I started thinking and just sort of casting my mind back over the good old days of the Cold War. And I asked myself, what happened back then, Bob? What happened back then to Soviet leaders who found themselves in hot water with the party? Well, remember how they'd get real sick, and they would have to go and spend time at private dasha and be out of eye of the people. They're men of people, but also, you know, men of people. And you wouldn't hear anything from the dear leader. He wouldn't be seen at any parades or hoisting any vodka glasses or anything. That's what your Rusky drinks, isn't it? Mandrake, vodka, always vodka. And then a little bit later they'd say, "Dear leader has passed on to great beyond. We are atheist nation, so he is not going to heaven or hell. Instead, he will go into vacuum-sealed, glass-lined case and be placed in closet in Kremlin somewhere." Right. We are all products of our various and sundry cultures, and it's hard to get out from under them sometimes. So for all that he thinks he is man of world, Vlad is still very much the son of Mother Russia. So he's going to look at problems through that lens. Yeah, consider, for instance, the two totally innocent guys, Russian spies, who were caught in Britain and put out the idea that they were, we are only two really very, very good friends who are big fans of Cathedral, who went to Salisbury to see Cathedral. And what is this Novichok that we are carrying with us? We don't know. We don't know nothing about that, huh? How about that? And you know what? If you put out a statement like that to in Russian media, to RT or whatever passes for you, what used to be Pravda and TASS and all of that, they will happily print it, and they will not make a million jokes about a couple of, good-looking young white men just traveling together being big fans of Salisbury Cathedral. So Vlad and that crowd don't understand that in the West people look at that we will not know what happened to bass player for Pussy Riot. It's strange. They don't. He doesn't comprehend the skepticism that meets that, because he is he's inured to being believed. If he says, "Citizens of Mother Russia, sky is pink with purple polka dots." "Yes, Comrade Vlad. Sky is pink with purple polka dots. We do not even need to go to window." Yeah. But we go to the window. And so when you run afoul of Vlad in Mother Russia, somebody shits on your car, throws you in it, and then poisons you to death. Yeah, right? Yeah. So I can just sort of imagine Vlad telling Donnie, sweetheart, go to hospital for a rest. They will leave you alone then. And all will be okay. You'll just go, Donnie. Everything worked out nicely. I will send you roses in hospital. Special roses. Does it sound far out there? Well, I mean for it to. But the bottom line is that he would, in my country, when you have political problem, you go to Dasha for a little while. Yes. It usually works. The reason I mention all this, though, is because, we went through the complicated gobbledygook in Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, but, of course, there are three other sections up front. The first one simply says, in the case of the removal of the president from office or his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. That's how you would wind up with President Pence if, in fact, Manafort isn't busy rolling over on him too right now. And there's a distinct possibility he may be. Section 2 is what happens if the vice president bolts and leaves the president there all by himself, and the president nominates a vice president who has to then be confirmed by both houses of Congress. But Section 3 is, call Section 3 the colonoscopy section. Whenever the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives a written declaration that he's unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits to them a written declaration to the contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president as acting president. I call it the colonoscopy section because such a declaration is submitted in the case of a president going under anesthesia. By definition, when you're off in la-la land getting the steel eel, you're unable to be president. So for however long it takes you to sober up, pursuant to a letter that gets sent to the Speaker of the House and the President pro tem of the Senate, the Vice President becomes, and the word acting is important, acting president. It is... It's interesting that both in the colonoscopy section and the great big knotted bowl of spaghetti section, Section 4, the vice president never becomes president of the United States. He is only acting president. But if you're looking for a way out, if the walls have closed in so far that your comb-over has begun to resemble a very tall, narrow mohawk, then Section 3 may be your way out. And some of this cannot help but be pure speculation. But you can almost imagine precious Ivanka saying, "Dadums, you know, we'd have a lot more time to be together if you weren't president anymore, Dadums. Remember how much fun we had together, Dadums? You could tell them that you're going to the hospital because you've been having some unexplained symptoms. And you could just leave... But Mike Pence wouldn't become president, Dadums. He'd only be acting president. You'd still be president, Dadums. And I could sit there right on your bed and remind you of stuff." Meanwhile, Don Jr. could be somewhere out in the hall saying, "Why doesn't he ever like me?" And Eric could be standing there going, "Huh? What?" Because he's losing the capacity to brazen it out. And the maggots would the maggots would be none the wiser, because maggots are never any the wiser, because maggots are maggots. And they wouldn't feel the need to grab their Freedom Protector guns and go out and start plinking at people, because their dear leader would still be their dear leader. He'd just be a dear leader who's getting some medical attention. He might just be getting it in a wing there of Walter Reed with the or the Bethesda Naval Hospital or whatever with the inflatable walls. And, yeah, this is 8-10 moves out on the chessboard. I realize that. Or, in my case, the checkerboard. But we are not in a normal place. We're in a place where standards and things that are normal and natural and ordinary, they no longer apply. Well, I'm sorry, Brother Deacon Asa. Be quiet and eat your taco. Brother Deacon Asa says, ouch, my ears, you sick, sick man, Kincaid, in regard to Ivanka by the bedside. Dadams. Daddy, I love you, Daddy. Really, really. Subject line, careful of what you eat. Ron in Raleigh says, I believe the Pussy Riot bass player got a hold of a bad bowl of borscht. That stuff can kill you. Well, yes, it can if it comes from Vlad's quick and easy takeaway. Oh, somewhere out there saying, Bob's been ponerized again. He doesn't understand that Vlad just loves us all and wants us to be happy like Jesus. Yeah. What's that? Oh, I didn't realize there was somebody else. Well, I'm sure Gotta Laugh's Ivanka is much better than my Ivanka. I'm just kind of going for a cheap Marilyn Monroe, breathy sort of, yeah. Well, Gotta Laugh as a girl, Marty. I would expect her to do Ivanka better than me. Damn! Do you realize how much work it takes for my vocal cords to get up here? It hurts! Randy in PA says, can you say President Ryan? Oh, blue wave, just make it to January, and it's President Pelosi. Jesus Christ, it'd be like the end of Mars Attacks. Maggot brains would be going all over the country. Only problem is they wouldn't have the fish bowls over their head to catch the goo. Well, there goes dinner in the Central Time Zone. And probably put people off their roasted green chilies in the Mountain Time Zone, and somewhere in the Pacific Time Zone, somebody just said, "Well, okay, fuck it." We'll. No, because y'all got taco trucks, right? Oh, thank you. This is big. Thank you very kindly. Darlene in Connecticut has put a $100 challenge on the table toward a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. If people will meet Darlene's challenge, that'll knock down 200 of the $600 we need to raise this evening. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you so much. And it would be nice if that happened like in the next 15-20 minutes, and then we can get started on the rest on the other 400, and maybe have a fighting chance at knocking it all down before the end of airtime. Keith, subject line, food porn, a photograph included. Keith says, you started it! That looks like some ribs. That looks like some real good ribs. Yum. Wait, Keith, aren't you in Texas? Shouldn't that be a picture of some brisket with some truly awe-inspiring burnt ends? I mean, I'm gonna have to talk to John Bridevo. I haven't seen any good brisket and burnt ends food porn in a while. No fair just going to the internet and sending a picture either. Okay, that's awesome to hear. Thank you, Mike in Cascadia. Mike just took care of $25 worth of Darlene's challenge. That means there's 75 to go. It would be wonderful if that went away. It just, you know, we had a little flurry there, and we can knock out the rest of it. I'm so sorry to even be spending time on this, but it's how we go. Maybe y'all aren't sorry I spend time on this. Maybe you're happy to have a program you can tune into and not have to listen to buy Gold Now ads. I don't know. All right. Thank you to Hung Like Jesus. That means we've got $55 to go on Darlene's challenge. That's tremendous. Thank you, Hung Like Jesus. Note coming in from Steve in New York, another member of the Horn House Council. No, that'd be cheating, Keith. Keith says, "Give me a minute on the burnt ends and brisket." Keith, unless you're a spacing guild master too and can fold and can fold brisket in space or anything, you don't have time. You don't have enough time to go out and smoke up a brisket. That takes it. I know that. Steve in New York says, Mueller on the chessboard and Manafort. There's only one problem. Trump is sitting on the other side of the board, wondering what all those neat little carved pieces are when he's just got flat black checker chips on his side. Regarding Manafort, pshaw. Everyone knows Manafort was only on the campaign briefly, but he made great coffee. Probably had a French press. No, he had a Russian press. That's like a French press. The Russian press is. It's like a French press. Only the coffee comes out tasting a little funny. You know, funny. Let's see here. Silent R. Lamar says, remember, Bob, Putin wants us to be happy with Jesus. Remember, Jesus is dead. Well, if you're going to be happy with Jesus, that's a little frightening. But I get the point. Let's see here. Thank you, Roberto. Roberto just took us down to $30 to go on Darlene's challenge. We're getting close to finishing off that challenge, and that's huge. So that's a big deal. Okay, I think we have connected a little early. I don't know. But again, a reminder, about 22 minutes till we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Well, we're not going to fire it up. That would burn it down. But you get the idea. And again, the stress line will be there for you if you can't muster Skype. So, other things that we have going for us, other interesting stories. Well, just for the sake of clarity, the Manafort information deals with money laundering and some of the stuff that that the jury hung on in Virginia. Interestingly. But he doesn't have to be tried in D.C. now by an actual fair judge. And the other thing is, there's nothing in the plea that points directly toward Donnie Dipshit. So that, of course, led Sarah Hasselbeck, Smokey Sandbags, to say that there's nothing in the plea that has anything to do with the president. Sarah, that's by design. Because, well, Mueller is still tight-lipped. You know, look, we may all be heartbroken by the time this is over with. Mueller may not go after Trump, but he sure is playing his hand like he doesn't want Trump to know what he knows. And no, there's nothing particularly Trumpy inside the information. But those two counts sure do sound impressive. And I think Billable Rick is working hard on some billable stuff. It's billable season there for Billable Rick again. But the fact of the matter is, you don't necessarily want to cause a media firestorm by putting something out there, about a direct relationship between Trump and Manafort until there's no way for Trump to get out of the box. Yeah. But those two charges, you know, conspiracy to obstruct justice and conspiracy against the United States, that word conspiracy is a little bit of a tell. Because, of course, you have to agree with someone else in order to have a conspiracy, and then some member of the conspiracy has to take a substantial step toward the completion of the act. So that means that Manafort has people to talk about, people that he worked with. Now, in the case of the Ukrainian money laundering and the shenanigans and failing to register as a foreign agent, that sort of thing, well, that doesn't touch Trump. But the agreement to, and this is telling, the agreement to cooperate with Mueller in his ongoing investigation, plus an agreement that he will cooperate with Mueller with none of his lawyers present, which means that nobody can go and tattle to the Trump regime, and Mueller ain't leaking. That's one of those things that's going to move the walls a little closer to that very tall, very narrow, very flat mohawk. Donald Trump's world is getting two-dimensional. Ron in Raleigh says, just in case you're wondering, the storm surge has reached 10 meters above flood level in New Bern, North Carolina. I know. I've been watching all day. So far, 4 deaths attributed to the storm, a mother and daughter killed by a fallen tree. I saw that earlier. Charlene, if you would please let us know you've heard from your son and his family there Morehead City, North Carolina. Please let us know. I've had them on my mind as we watch the storm make its progress. I was listening to the radio earlier today and that program 1A on public radio comes from WAMU. They were giving out tips for dealing with the hurricane, and one woman called in and said something about they had left their home, they decamped because the state of South Carolina won't let us cut these big old oak trees in our yard. And I'd already heard the story about it. Right. We should probably talk maybe a little bit later about the bizarreness of what happened in Massachusetts last night. 70 families basically don't have homes this evening. And it wasn't a hurricane. It was a perfectly typical, normal act of corporate screw-up. Columbia Gas. Yeah. But the more I thought about it, the more troubled I became. And the fact that well, damn it. I'm pretty sure that in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, natural gas networks are not entirely controlled by roughnecks standing at the compressor station, spinning wheel-shaped valves to make the gas go where they want it to go. There are probably some valves. Make no mistake. But I'm guessing the thing is probably tied into a computer system. I had a note from Randy in PA earlier today. And Randy said, let me find it here. The Massachusetts gas explosions may possibly be the result of a learning algorithm that had been reset and was learning in real time. There was a famous computer programming problem involving genetic algorithms, a form of learning algorithm which controlled gas pressure in a pipeline in real time. Well, that would be, and as horrifying as the event was, that would just be a case of simple corporate negligence. And there's already a death out of that and several people in the hospital. One person killed when a chimney fell on their car. But simple corporate negligence is a lot more palatable than the idea that some state actor hacked into the natural gas system and tweaked the algorithm to overpressurize the lines. I'm not saying that happened. I'd like to think that perhaps there's a little bit more security around systems like that, because after all, we know from the last year or 2 years or so that Russian state actors have tried to hack into various power grids. And that's terrifying, because there's no end of mischief that could be made out of that, no end of disaster. And one hopes that at least, and again, you know, this is not the FBI Appreciation Network. They've got a long and sordid history. But one would hope that from a counterterrorism standpoint, that the FBI is at least investigating to make sure that it wasn't something like that, and that it was just a matter of simple corporate negligence, in which case, you know, the people who were affected will have a years-long nightmare of trying to wring compensation out of Columbia Gas. Here's a little food for thought. The corporate folks at Columbia Gas are probably sitting around, you know, it'd be real convenient if we could blame terrorism for this. We probably wouldn't have to pay for it. Because corporate minds work that way. Well, by God, he did it. Keith found a consolation prize. Here's the chopped brisket stuffed potato. The brisket cooked for 12 hours, dry rub and hickory smoked. The brisket's mixed with homemade sauce and put in the potato with some butter, and then topped with Colby Jack cheese. I'll see if I can get my other pictures off that old phone. That looks good. I'm going to be starving by the time this program's over. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar says, it sounds like Trump needs someone on that wall he wants. Well, the only wall that Trump needs has got inflatable sides, and he needs to be among them on the inside, not the outside. Marty says, Columbia Gas, like PGE in San Bruno? A little bit, but this seems just even weirder. I remember that story. This seems just even weird, because wasn't San Bruno just a failure of crappy, old, neglected infrastructure? This sounds different from that, based on what little information we're getting early on. Hey, big thanks to Michael in Madison. Thank you, Michael. That just took us down to $5 to go on Darlene's challenge, which will then leave us with $400 to go to finish the week. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. What else? Another reason for Julius Geezer to have that feeling, the same feeling that a old hound dog does when he's trying to pass a peach pit. Reports are being published that, having gone into federal court and said specifically that he was directed to make the illegal payoffs to the former Playboy Playmate of the Year and Stormy Daniels, that Michael Cohen, that he had made the based on the instruction and orders from Geezer Disgustus. Well, he is now, Michael Cohen is, said to be reaching a full agreement to just straight up cooperate with Mueller. This is meaningful because the prosecution of Michael Cohen was, of course, not handled by the Mueller team. It was handled by the workaday meat and potatoes folks there of the Southern District of New York. But now he's going to sit down and have a little talk with Mueller's team. And Cohen knows where a lot of bodies are buried. All this is making the maggots fresh off of a frenetic conniption of setting fire to their tennis shoes. Well, they've decided that with Manafort flipping, Donald Trump's term, the maggots have said that this is proof that Donald Trump done outsmarted everybody. No, really. The bizarre attempt at a human being known by the name Jack Posobiec said, Paul Manafort is required to cooperate with prosecutors in the Mueller investigation as part of this plea deal. Sentencing is going to be deferred based on his successful cooperation. Andrew Weissman is handling this himself, so clearly this is not a small deal. Well, okay. That's about as banal as you can make it sound. But that set off a tweet storm from the weird maggots who follow Jack Posobiec. One of them noting, "Doesn't sound good for Podesta Group, honestly."
"Yes, it is a small deal."
"Seems very suspicious to me. Sentencing is going to be deferred based on his successful cooperation, like if he can lie well enough. Are you kidding me? Moggy, y'all."
Moggy. Oh, really? I love this one. "Paul Manafort is playing the prosecutors." I'm sorry, that's almost the Trump voice, but, well, you know, the maggot voice can't always be a redneck now, can it? "He's got nothing. He knows it because nothing happened. Total witch hunt. These people are flipping because they know that there is zero hard evidence against real Donald Trump. Zero. All caps. Nothing. All fabricated. Complete witch hunt." I ran out of time, but I was going to try to tweet and Facebook an image of, you remember, what's her name, Zelda? The witch from the Bugs Bunny cartoons? Somewhere out there, there's got to be a still of Zelda, or hopefully a gif of Zelda flying straight into a wall, you know, on her broom. "It was a witch hunt. Well, we found another witch." You know, just think, if this was only 300 or so years ago, they'd actually make Paul Manafort and the rest of the witches wear pointy hats. And wouldn't that be fun? Let's see. "Manafort's going to blow this thing wide open. It's not Trump he'll implicate. Oh, boy. Manafort's going to flip on the Podesta brothers. Can't wait to see all the libtards' crap faces when Trump isn't charged with anything. That's going to be better than sex." Better than sex? "Welcome to the new age of Show Me the Man, and we will find the crime. Be afraid, you grade school students. We will go way back, and even if nothing is there, if we say enough, they will believe."
Which brings us to Brett Kavanaugh,
which we will probably talk about during the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Oh, and Hung Like Jesus wiped out the last $5 of Darlene's challenge, so that's a big deal. First hour of the program, we've knocked out Wednesday's fundraising. That leaves last night and tonight and gives us a fighting chance to pay the damn bills and keep the program on the air. Thank you, Hung Like Jesus. Charlene gets us started on that road. So there's only $375 to go now. Charlene with a note says, "Thanks, Bob, for asking. My son and company are fine. They did stay home, but they're in an area protected by forest on all sides. No large trees close to the house. Now they have to watch for flooding." And there's a lot of rain coming down. I hope they're on what passes for high ground, Charlene. I really, really do. Matt in San Francisco says, the San Bruno explosion. "Yes, old crappy pipes apparently sounded like a freight train before it blew and killed 8 and destroyed a neighborhood. P.S., PG&E is trying to pass a proposition that would have us residents pay when they blow places up. Murka!" Well, of course, it's your fault for using their stuff. And you know, when they make arguments like that, they make the clean energy futures argument for it. I mean, has anybody been killed by a solar spill or a wind turbine, not windmill, Sparky, I've learned, a wind turbine just spinning out of control. I'm sure there are injuries in the installation of wind turbines, and I'm sure people, there are occasional worker injuries in installing solar panels. But when's the last time you heard of 70 houses being destroyed because of the operation of solar panels or wind turbines? Yeah, me neither. Rhonda, I will read that probably after the program. I think I read some of it. I know I read some of it earlier. The modus operandi of Paul Manafort as filed today in the federal court. Terrace says, Boston riddled with mostly small natural gas leaks, according to a study from Boston University. Perspectives differ on risk. Bill in Allentown says, subject line, Trump, wouldn't you just like to see Donnie be dragged out of the White House? I'd like to see him perp walked out of the White House. Fulfilling that John Dowd prophecy of you'll be wearing an orange jumpsuit. But again, that'll send the maggots right up and out of a tree. And we cannot run a civic structure on fear. But I think we also have to at least take into account the possibility that if things get really, really bad for Trump, the maggots may be A, inclined toward violence, and B, encouraged toward it. Not quite, Brother Deacon Asa, but thanks for trying. Wait, didn't 11 workers get blowed to kingdom come on an offshore wind platform in the Gulf of Mexico about 7 years ago? I'm sure BP would like you to think that. So that's the first hour, that's the filibobster. And I am thrilled that we were able to knock down a third of what we need to raise this evening. Hopefully and we're started on the second third. Thank you, Charlene. And hopefully, we'll get to the rest of it. Let's see. I've seen that. Yeah, Megan with the visual of the witch flying onto a broom, or flying on a broom, and yeah. Splot. Well, hey, let's run over to, let me wander into the old hollow tree where we've got folks gathered around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And let's check in. Hey, Sparky.
I'm under the redwood, Bob. I don't know about your hollow tree.
Well, I mean, it's a virtual hollow tree. We rent it from the Keebler Elves.
One of these days, I'm going to do the front porch from underneath the tree so I can shine the video camera right up into the cathedral of the redwood, Santa Cruz Mountain redwood tree.
Oh, that'd be beautiful. For I have seen that tree. Is that the tree? Is that the tree that Ferg hugged?
Yep.
Yeah,
it's bigger now.
Really, just in that relatively brief span of time, it's bigger?
Yeah, the base of it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We used to measure it every year.
Wow.
Because the base has to get bigger so it can get taller.
Yeah, so it can support the height. Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, Sparky, let me. You said Billable Rick might be available for a question or two here at the very beginning, but that he's working hard on Billable stuff. Is he with us? Because I do have a question.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hey, Billable Rick. Happy Billable season.
Yeah, I got about an hour of sleep last night here in the office, actually.
are you just mainlining the coffee straight in then?
I've kind of laid off the coffee since around 10 or 11. I'm doing okay.
Cool.
I had a late lunch. I'm eating some pizza now, so.
Well, I don't want to eat up too much of your time, but.
Maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes or so.
Have you ever heard of, or is it possible to include in a plea agreement, because I saw a fundamental mistake in at least one report today. This was CNN saying, read the Manafort plea here.
Mm, okay.
And basically, it was a copy of the information and a narrative of what he was pleading guilty to.
Right.
But as you and I and anybody else who ever had a cup of coffee in law school know, what you plead to is not the same thing as the plea agreement. The plea agreement contains the specific terms and conditions under which the plea will be entered and what the parties will receive as a product of their arm's length bargain, correct?
Yeah. And also just for the folks who aren't lawyers, a lot of times if there's a plea agreement which provides for, substantial assistance, that's what they call cooperation. A lot of times those are filed under seal, and those are not disclosed until such time as the substantial assistance has ended. Okay.
Right. And the sentencing probably won't happen until the substantial assistance has ended.
Right.
And the substantial assistance can include, if need be, testimony under oath at the trial of anyone and everyone who is the subject of the investigation about whom the witness has knowledge.
Right.
Okay,
exactly.
So now we get to the gravamen of my question. I love using law school words like gravamen.
That's great. Well, there you go. You had a couple of cups of coffee in law school, I would say, Bob. More than just one.
So
you had a whole pot.
A lot of pot.
There you go. Yeah.
but so here it is. Can one? And I don't. I'm not being rude. I can't imagine you ever ran across this in your experience, but maybe you did. Can one make as a term and condition of the plea that the defendant agrees not to accept any pardon if extended to him?
Yes, I'll tell you why. A plea agreement is analogous to a contract.
Exactly.
It's analyzed with regard to contractual principles. It's not a contract as such, but it's very much like one. And so, yeah, you can include provisions like that. And I think you, on your program, maybe in the last month or so, you talked about an old case like from the 1800s where a gentleman who was on death row had been given a pardon or a commutation of a sentence by a president, or maybe it was a governor, not sure. And he declined that. And the court held that, that in order to, in order for a pardon to be effective, it has to be accepted by the person to whom it's granted. So, it's not automatic. Like, Donnie can't just say, okay, you're pardoned. I mean, you can say, no, F you, Donnie, I'm not going to take this.
So in hopes of not doing any anything other than time served,
mm-hmm.
and as a means having entered into a plea agreement,
mm-hmm.
And agreeing to truthfully testify, which essentially waives one's Fifth Amendment rights, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mueller could conceivably completely circumvent the pardon power of the President of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as plea deal, though, if you think about it.
I'm sorry, you broke up there. You said as long as.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if Manafort somehow decides, you know, let's say Donnie Dipschitz gives him a pardon, and Manafort decides to say, well, you know, I think I'll just go ahead and take this pardon. I'll go ahead and Welsh on my plea agreement. What is the remedy of Manafort at that point? Oh, well, we're going to undo the plea agreement, and now, you know, and now you can be charged with all these crimes. Wait a second, you've been pardoned, and you accepted it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I think this is the kind of deal where he could, you know, unilaterally decide to accept the pardon, and I don't think Mueller would have any remedy or recourse in that situation.
No, but he is facing state charges in New York or potential for state charges that Trump can't touch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's not likely that Andrew Cuomo will give him a pardon either.
Right. No. You know, that's about as likely as there being a hurricane here in Los Angeles today, Bob.
Not a cloud in the sky, huh?
No, it's beautiful. I can see Catalina from here. I'm looking out at the ocean. About 80, low 80s today. Beautiful day. Beautiful day. Wish I didn't have to work so hard, but, you know, that's the way it goes, you know?
Well, tote that barge, lift that bale.
Yeah. We have a little quick time up front for some concert porn.
Oh, sure.
Oh, no, are we going to start that stuff here?
Yeah.
Hi, John.
I saw the Eagles at the Forum on Wednesday night.
Rick, I'm telling you, you're killing me, buddy. They were tremendous.
Don Henley gave a really heartfelt talk about, you know, Glenn Frey and how he missed him. And it turns out they're recording all three nights they're playing at the Forum. LA Forum. So that they're recording Wednesday night. Then their next show is, I think, tonight. And then they have a show on Saturday night. So, you know, it was pretty good. There was a meathead in front of me who was saying, come on, guys, come on. You know, I can't hear you. Play louder. What, you know, you guys are old, you know. and I made a comment to him. I said something to the effect like, you know, you don't have to blast it to have good music. I think these guys are trying to avoid there being, like, you know, distortion because they're trying to record the frickin' thing. They're audio and video recording it, you know?
Well, it had to be a good show. I mean, was it the old stuff? All the old stuff and, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They played really good stuff. They played the version of Hotel California. The start of it is like the Godfather theme song. Like with guitars, and then they go into it, you know. And then they played a song from the Hell Freezes Over album from '94, and a song from. They sang Desperado at the very end. They had a couple encores. They sounded great, and then Deacon Fry is really adjusted and really has come into his own. He's got a great voice, and he sang a lot of his father's songs and.
Does he sound like his daddy?
Father, you know, like I think Tequila Sunrise is one of them, and some others. And then Vince Gill was there too. And I think probably the most underappreciated talent in the band is probably Timothy B. Schmidt. He's got a tremendous voice, and he sang a couple of songs. So it was a good time. And then, of course, Joe Walsh does his stuff, you know, from the James Gang, you know. And, you know, from, you know, Life Is Good to Me and Life's Been Good to Me and, you know, that whole thing. And I even heard a single from a hit from Don Henley, one of his albums.
I'm assuming Don Felder wasn't there.
I think he was.
Was he?
Everybody was there. Yeah. Yeah. He's the guy I didn't recognize. So it must have been Don Felder. Yeah.
Hey, Rick, did they do In the City?
Yeah, they did that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, I love that song. Great song.
Yeah, they did. They played for about, they didn't have a warm up band, so that left more time for them to play. So it was about probably a 2 hour, 20 minute concert.
Wow. And so.
You know, they kind of came back for a surprise one. I didn't expect it. That's when, you know, Don Henley closed with Desperado. So.
Did it set you back pretty bad?
No, I bought it back in February when I had money. I looked at the ticket price. It was about, I was not too far from the nosebleed. I was maybe 10 rows from the very top. And it cost me about like $178 for two tickets, including all the fees, which is actually pretty good for an Eagle show. I'd say very good. But I understand the tickets like way low down were probably $1,500. So that was way out of my range.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw there's a hashtag that's been making the rounds today called In the 80s We. INTHE80SWE. In the 80s We.
Oh, okay.
And somebody posted a picture of a ticket stub, and it said, In the 80s, we got to see Prince and the Revolution on the Purple Rain Tour for $17.50.
Oh, damn. And those are probably real close-in seats. Well, you know, my recommendation for folks who want to see their favorite performers up close.
Don't live in West Virginia or the wilds of rural Texas. Would that be it?
Yeah, that would be a good start right there.
Yeah, well, my suggestion is that you go to a festival where you can arrive early and park yourself right near the stage and just keep your ass there the whole day.
Yeah, don't move.
You know?
Yeah.
We have one coming up here in Austin where Willie Nelson's going to play for Beto O'Rourke.
Oh, I heard about
and
that.
Aren't the little Texas maggots just losing the sloshy remnants of their tiny little minds?
They're coming out of the woodwork. They're coming out. Did they really think Willie Nelson would be a Republican? That's what just bugs me all day.
Oh, come on. He's
Are
only
you shitting
Yeah, that,
me?
That long hair with the pony with the braided pony. Yeah. Yeah. That's a wig and smoking. He usually wears Brooks Brothers suits every day.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, baby. We're proud of Willie. Yeah.
Hey, I've got a funny story to tell about Beto.
What you got?
I had to inform a client the other day that he'd just been indicted and we were trying to set up his initial appearance and he's
legal
like
humor that.
Yeah. He's in the construction trades and he goes back and forth between Texas and California. And so I was explaining, well, you know, he doesn't have much in the way of defenses. So we're probably going to try to get his tax loss down and get him to plead to a charge like Manafort did.
Right.
And, you know, so he cashed checks and, you know, that was what the government wrote him up for, essentially, the gross receipts that he didn't report. He claims that he was paying off his subcontractors, material men, you know, workers, that kind of thing with that money. Right. But I don't think he has very good documents for it. But anyway, the point of the story, discussing some of the collateral consequences of a conviction. If you get a felony conviction, well, you know, you won't be able to serve on a jury, darn. You won't be able to own a firearm. He said, oh, that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
And then I said, and you won't be able to vote to reelect Senator Ted Cruz. Or maybe you want to vote for Beto O'Rourke. He said, no, I'm a Cruz guy. It's like, And then I thought, well, geez, you deserve to go to jail. Then,
buddy, you're going to fry.
I know it's unethical, but don't help me that much, Rick. Come on now. We don't need you here, buddy.
I can tell you that it's not. There's no way to identify him. Yeah, I can be generic, John.
Let his ass fry. We don't need another Trumper down here, baby. We got plenty of them.
Oh yeah, well he and his family and wife live in a mobile home in Texas. So, and he has jobs in both California and Texas. So, he's been indicted in California though. So he's going to have to deal with the charges up there.
We got a few down here that are under indictment for swindling people after Harvey.
They deserve it.
Taking the money and then hitting the road, you know. We'll be back Tuesday. Wow. You know, they didn't specify which Tuesday, so.
Yeah, are they like travelers or something?
I think a lot of people got hit with that, you know, because people were desperate for repairs. And, you know, help is hard to find, you know.
You pay half up front and pay the other half at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think in a situation like that where you're really taking advantage of somebody in a difficult situation, that the time should be automatically doubled. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for, let's say, setting a forest fire, you know. I would advocate life without parole for that almost, you know?
Yeah, if it's an intentional act of arson.
Yeah, exactly.
Look what, you know, people lose, can lose everything and have lost everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're trying to hold on. So.
And then a lot of times the firefighters are the ones who die, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're right on the front lines, you know?
You know, oddly enough, when the news of the Manafort plea broke, and I thought about the rock and a hard place between which Paul Manafort found himself.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought of a famous image from Texas history, John.
What's that?
Because I had a good friend back when I was having that cup of coffee in law school who had gone to UT.
Yes, sir.
And had a picture hanging on the wall. Had a picture hanging on the wall of Santa Anna and Sam Houston under the treaty oak.
Yes, sir. I know what picture you're talking about.
And the explanation was given one night. There was a lot of beer flowing, and the explanation for the photo was, because what's that? Well, that's Santa Anna and Sam Houston under the treaty oak. And Sam Houston is explaining to Santa Anna that he can either sign that there paper or hang from that there tree.
Either one, take the pick, buddy.
And so I thought of Robert Mueller in the role of Sam Houston there, explaining to Paul Manafort, you can either sign that there paper, or you can hang from that there tree.
That's it. You got a choice, baby. What's it? Oh, John Eubanks, man. You got, you know, it's strictly up to the. Yeah, that's another story. He's in a crack. What's he going to do? When I was looking at that, the best thing that I read in there that, you know, as a layman was the a part about the agreement of successful cooperation. He doesn't get immunity from this stuff until the successful completion of his flipping of his, you know, agree to cooperate. And like you all were just discussing, there's no limit on what they can ask him or what they can ask him. You know, it's not limited to, just this. No.
Yeah, I'll be a little sexist here. I'd be a little sexist here. He's basically their bitch, okay? He's the government's bitch.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Sorry, ladies.
And see, here's the fun part. Remember that up until Manafort was completely had his claws into the campaign, Trump had wanted to have Chris Christie as his running mate.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It was Manafort who sold Trump on Mike Pencil Neck Geek.
Mm.
Yep.
And Pence in turn.
Mike Pence could bring the godly vote.
Exactly. But that means that Mike Pence is theoretically brought within the orbit of the skeevy shit that Manafort did with the campaign.
There you go.
Because remember, they faked plane problems in Indianapolis so that Manafort could stay the night and have a special breakfast meeting with Pence, and I don't know if Mother was there or not.
Where Pence goes, Mother goes. Somebody has to hold that man's hand.
Yeah. He's pathetic.
Guys, the reason he was brought on was because of the evangelical. They knew what they had in Donnie. They know it. They got a scumbag. He's a con man. That's what else can you look? You look all through his history. He's nothing but a con.
Well, he's perfect for Donnie.
So you got to sell that. Plus, you got to throw in the grabbing pussy thing and all the other crap that came out with the women accusing him. So you had to counteract that with a mighty, or what would Donnie say, bigly, evangelical. And there's Pence. And they think when they throw Donnie out, Pence is just going to waltz right in there. And he will. He will. If Donnie gets thrown out for some, however we can do it, Pence waltzes in, but he wouldn't get reelected.
I think the only way Donnie's getting thrown out is if he leaves on a stretcher, let's just say he has a health emergency.
Well, what do you think of my theory of the creative use of the 25th Amendment? He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to resign.
I didn't catch the end of the program.
No. Well, that was last night. But what I started with this evening, the 25th Amendment would enable him to quietly bow out without resigning, and Mike Pence would just be acting president for the remainder of the term.
So Donnie couldn't be prosecuted then.
Right.
That's slick.
Oh, wouldn't he be able to?
Sure, but you could, but I mean...
I'm looking at the 25th Amendment right now. I have it in my hand.
Okay.
I have my little book here. Unfortunately, my glasses are in the kitchen.
John, this all grew out of the fact that the 25th Amendment, Section 4, is a total mess.
Yeah.
But yeah. If Donnie were to avail himself of Section 3, the colonoscopy clause, then that's just open-ended.
Right.
He sends a letter to the President pro tem and the Speaker of the House that he can't discharge his powers and duties, and then Mike Pence is just acting president until he comes back and says he's not.
Donnie could just—he could like hang out in Switzerland like Pope Benedict is, and he'd still be the U.S. president.
You know, it would be the smartest thing he could do if he stays in this. You know, the collusion—I don't, you know—I think it's collusion already with the damn meeting up in Trump Tower. I think that's enough evidence right there.
Yeah, I think so. Donnie Jr. Talked on an unmarked phone, or I guess a phone that had no.
He made that call upstairs to Daddy.
Yeah, he called Daddy.
I mean, it's like they say, well, prove it.
Answer from Mueller is, I'll prove it.
Yeah, I hope, because, I don't know how that all works. Y'all are lawyers, not me.
I'm not a lawyer.
There's a way to do that.
I know the law of common sense. Yes, he called his daddy. How much shit are you willing to travel, shovel up somebody's butt?
Even though a number is blocked, there's always a way for technology to unblock
it. I'm sure.
So Mueller probably knows what number Don Jr. called, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Rick, they can subpoena the PIN record, the PIN register.
Of course they can, sure.
And that's not even listening in. That's not eavesdropping. That's not wiretapping.
That's just verifying the call. Verifying the call from what phone to what phone.
Yep.
And like I say, who doesn't know that that's who he called?
Of course he did.
There's one idiot out there that would say, oh, I don't think he called. You're just an idiot. Somebody ought to slap you. Get the hell out the way. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
If you don't believe something that common, just that simple, then you're just working against, he's guilty. And now you're just trying to work against his ass.
Well, if anybody believes that, I can maybe... how Steve and I from New York can sell somebody a bridge that traverses the boroughs in New York.
Man,
I'd
put that up there. Put a reasonable price on it. I think it'd sell pretty fast because there's some idiots out there. I'm telling you.
I
still want to know why Manafort went to work for Trump campaign with no pay.
Well, I think Manafort is eventually fishy
to me.
Well, he was going to use his connections to try to make money, just like Michael Cohen did.
Yeah, and remember, at that point in time, he's still an unregistered agent of a foreign power, and he's just going to roll it into a few more millions.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm thinking with the history, as he's liable to have to answer any questions they start giving him. I'm not sure it's the Russia thing. As far as political crime might be, the crime is going to be that he knows exactly what's going on with the money laundering that Donnie's handily.
One thing I found very interesting was...
No, you're still here, John. You're still here, John.
Yeah, John. Lordy. One thing I found interesting was the comments of Manafort's attorney after Manafort took...
You're here, John.
Did you catch that, Bob? How he said Manafort's very happy now that he and his family are going to be safe and
he wasn't worried about Mueller having him bumped off.
No, he was worried about the Ukrainian mob, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
So there must be some kind of an arrangement whereby Manafort's not going to roll against the mob, the Ukrainian mob. And maybe that was their way of broadcasting that to the Ukrainians that, hey, don't worry about it. You know, we got a good deal. You know, he's not going to mess with you. Although that's really his greatest value, though, is the problem. Unless he's going to be in a witness protection program, which is possible.
Yes.
In his family.
That's exactly
yeah, so he'd have to hire.
Yeah, because they could still reach him in jail. There's no question about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So hey, Steve, how you feeling, buddy?
Yes. Hey, Bob, what's going on, man? I'm doing okay, except I got to tell you, man, your boy Joe Scarborough had my blood pressure bulling this morning, man.
My boy, you know, watch your mouth, Peckerwood.
Do you know what he had the balls to say?
What's that?
You know how I feel about both siderisms. So this just went right fucking through me, man. He said, Donald Trump is a logistical conclusion for the collective dysfunction we have been seeing in Washington for the last 30 years, including Bill Clinton. I'm like, you motherfucker, you're comparing a blowjob to Trump's criminalism? Are you fucking kidding me, man? And you know why he's saying that? Because he wants to protect his cushy little job. He doesn't want to come off on the wrong side of history when this whole thing just goes up in flames. He wants to be there with Mika and his girlfriend and keep his cushy fucking job, man.
Well, okay, so
that,
we
that
yeah,
pissed
so
me off so bad I was seeing red, man.
So we can start with the fact that and I drew this comparison on Twitter earlier today when I was watching it. Chris Hayes, who is a journalist, Chris Hayes takes All In on the road, and he goes to Flint, Michigan, and has a serious conversation about what the hell is still wrong in Flint. And what's wrong with the country? And there was a conversation with Michael Moore, that kind of thing. Joe Scarborough takes Morning Joe on the road because he wants to see Alabama play Ole Miss in Oxford.
God.
Now, I'm a football fan, okay? I mean, I am. But honest to Pete, and I mean, as far as I could tell watching this morning, the whole purpose of going to Oxpatch was to, A, go to the football game, and B, make tired old Yankee jokes at Mika's expense. I mean, God Almighty. Mike Espy was brought on, and guess who they, of course they didn't bother to book Chakwe Lumumba, who is probably the most dynamic young politician in the state of. In the state of Mississippi, but by God, they brought on Pappy McDaniel, that vile old teabag and maggot racist, who's running for Senate. And the whole thing was just a hot mess. But I heard another example of both siderism that had me barking. I had to go over to Summersville to the pharmacy today. On the way back, I'm listening to that 1A program on NPR. And they had three people on there. One guy from CBS News, a woman from the AP, and some dude from the Washington Free Beacon. Or the Washington Exam. I don't remember what it was. But he sounded pretty wing nutty. And they were talking about how the Trump regime had raided the FEMA budget and given it to ICE. And his answer was, well, both sides do it, because under Obama, they took money from immigration, from ICE, and gave it to FEMA. It's just, budgets are just political statements, that's all they are. And I thought, you asshole.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the Obama administration, they took money from ICE so that they could help American citizens with FEMA. And this guy thinks it's the same thing to raid FEMA, which is supposed to help American citizens, so that they can pay to kidnap children. No. They're not equivalent.
Well, you know, Bob, they're protecting them from the marauding MS-13 gang members that are just pouring over the border down here.
Yeah, the MS-13 ISIS Mexicans.
Yeah, that's them. They're all over the place down here, Bob. Yeah,
with calves.
Running over 10 of them.
Yeah, with calves the size of cantaloupes.
I'm telling you, baby. Baby.
Steve, you're telling me the triangulation man, he blamed the triangulation man for all the dysfunction? Are you kidding me? Wasn't Scarborough in the Congress when Clinton was president? Didn't Clinton sign all his horseshit legislation? And now he wants to throw Clinton under the bus?
That would be a yes, a yes, a yes, and a yes.
Yeah. What a bunch of bullshit. That's why I was climbing the walls.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Triangulation, man. He's going to put it at his feet. Nice.
And that's why they're all doing it. You know, and that's why I was so relieved that Bob brought up George Bush and all his criminal activity. We need to make these fuckers own what they did. We cannot forget.
Oh, I never forget W.
You got guys like Bill Kristol and the ball-headed Steve Godman.
Anytime somebody turned the conversations toward, well, you know what, we got over in Iraq and all what they, I should stay out. Well, thank you, George W. Bush. That's where it all
Steve
started.
Schmidt, I mean, yeah, I'm glad you had your epiphany, but thanks a boatload for Sarah fucking Palin. You know,
yeah.
I don't forgive none of these fuckers. I don't, man. I'm sorry.
No.
Call me a bad person, whatever you want.
Point.
I don't.
Past
that point,
yep.
Baby.
That's being a responsible person. Never forget all these assholes.
Yep. Palin's nomination made possible the Tea Party movement, in my opinion.
Well, sure. That jackass on CNBC. And the entire Tea Party movement was just a rejuvenated John Birch Society hollering about the Kenyan Muslim you slurper in the White House. Damn.
That's it. The same group of people, they just come out under different names.
Yeah.
Whatever motivates them towards hate, and that's exactly what they're full of.
Well, see, that's
all of that.
That's like the same load of horse shit that was trundled out this morning on my filthy little habit, where they said that, they were interviewing a venerable journalism professor from the university there, and I had no beef with him. And he said, you know, I left Oxford and I left the university in the late 60s because I was so disgusted with the way things were in Mississippi. And that he came back when things got better. But somewhere along the way, he said, of course, Mississippi used to be an almost a one-party state Democrat. And now it's just about a one-party state Republican. And I thought, well, they're the same people.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
LBJ said when he signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, we have lost the South for a generation. And
he was
changed roles.
And beginning with Nixon's Southern strategy and culminating in Ronald Reagan kicking off his campaign in Philadelphia, Neshoba County, Mississippi, in the beating heart of the goddamn Klan, that was the biggest dog whistle in American politics in the last 50 years. And he told all those disaffected, and this is where the myth of the Reagan Democrat comes from, because all of those racist white Democrats in the South went, well, if he's going to start his campaign in the home
that's
of the Klan, that's our boy.
Yeah.
And so it's how
things have changed.
You know, it's just a generational transfer. The grandchildren of the people who were racist Democrats in Mississippi in 1969 are racist Republicans in Mississippi in 2018.
Yes, sir.
It cannot be that difficult to comprehend. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
Joe chumming up with Haley Barbour this morning as well?
Fortunately, I had a phone call, so I didn't have to subject my blood pressure to that part.
Man. Yeah, well, thank God I got a remote control nearby.
Sure. About what you're talking about, Bob?
Yeah, go.
Has anyone here heard of Rick Perlstein?
Sure.
A writer? You have. Okay, good. He's got lots of great books out, all of them on conservative history, really. Goldwater, Nixon Land is a must read, but it's, 1,500 pages, something. It's crazy. The book on Reagan, I'm about a third of the way through that. I think it's Invisible Bridge, and that's got exactly what you were talking about, Bob, the history of Reagan. And It goes all the way to his youth in Dixon, Illinois, and his how he grew up and everything. Unbelievable writer, unbelievable books, and it gives you all the ammunition you need to fight maggots, libertarians, you know, even moderate right wingers. You know, if they accept facts, and that's of course a big if.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, John.
Hard to interrupt you right here. I just joined back in. We have a weather system moving in. It didn't get a name. They sent a hurricane hunter out there to look at it. Didn't form up. And it just came on shore as a wave this evening. We have a lot of weather. I've already been dropped 3 times, and half the time I can't tell what y'all are saying because it's coming in. And so I'm doing a disservice by hanging around here, buddy. I keep dropping off, and I'm only here.
Well, I hope stuff doesn't get all shitty on you.
No, we're going to get a lot of rain, just a slight breeze. You know, there's no problem with the wind. It didn't turn into a tropical storm, but it came ashore as investigation number 95. And so we've just got a lot of rain and a lot of weather come down here. And every time it does this, I lose my signal. And
be safe, Uncle John, please.
Not a problem, Papa. We're ready. They are projecting my damn river to come up, though, so that's what I'm hoping for. Just don't give me a flood right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
We've been through several. It's not like a rushing thing or anything like that. It just makes life miserable for about a month or so. And so I'm hoping.
Well, keep the kayaks handy, John.
I got the kayak ready, baby. If it comes to that, that's our way in and out for a while when we get cut off. But I'll go ahead and say good night to all of y'all. Rick, man, buddy, you got to do something with this habitual concert thing going on.
Sorry, John. I've got to stop.
It's going to ruin your life, buddy.
John, before you go, John.
Good night, John.
John, I got second row seats to see Johnny Rivers in Beverly Hills on September 30th. Are you going to shoot me?
I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to come down there, buddy. I'm going to hunt you down. I'm sorry.
Hey, John, stay safe and check in and tweet or something or Facebook and let us all know you're okay, all right?
Oh, I'll be fine. I'm thinking about going live at the internet. They'll allow me this weekend sometime on YouTube. We did a 2-hour live the other night on YouTube. I couldn't believe I kept my mouth running that long.
Sometimes, you know, when you're...
Well, you had Travis to help you.
I did indeed.
When you're slain in the spirit, man, you just got to go where the spirit leads.
You go with it. Next thing you know, I'm speaking in tongues. It's you know, when the spirit grabs you, buddy. When the spirit grabs you.
There you go.
Y'all have a pleasant evening. Keep the conversation great. Rick, take care of yourself. Everybody else, Sparky, I'll talk to you later, bub. And y'all have a great evening.
See you, buddy.
See you, John. Take care.
Y'all too. Bye.
The one and only John Britovo, Blue Dot in Texas, Blue Dot Nation. Find him on YouTube. Find him on Facebook. Find him on Twitter. And I didn't get to ask him if he. I gotta assume he's gonna go to the concert, Sparky.
He's got a great radio voice. Really does.
What concert?
The Willie Nelson concert for Beto.
No, he can't make it up to Austin.
Oh, that's got to be breaking his heart.
That's too much gas money for his big, thirsty truck.
That's true.
Yeah. Rick, you still there?
They are thirsty.
I am. Steve, how are you?
If you can make it to the East Coast, man, I might have 6-row Kansas tickets for you to go see the 30th. I'm having reconstruction foot surgery on Thursday, and I just don't want to chance it. I'll be in a wheelchair, you know, trying to schlep through the crowd and all that. And
it's 30th this month?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. That's my Johnny Rivers date.
Where's the show, Steve?
It's in Cobb County at the Symphony Hall.
Ooh, Kansas in a Symphony Hall? That's something.
Yep. Nice. That'll be nice.
Yeah, I hate to pass one. I'm thinking about trading them out for some handicap seats, so I haven't totally given up on it. I'll see where I'm at then. But
never give up, Steve. Thanks for the offer, though, man.
Oh, no problem. But if you would take the effort to fly down here, I would definitely turn you on to it.
Hey, Rick, if you go out east, make sure you bring a bucket.
Oh, yeah. I'll make sure I bring, like, about 6 rolls of paper towel, you know? Yeah, I've been practicing flipping them to people to help clean up from the flooding out there, you know?
Yeah, the quicker picker-upper.
Yeah. I've already decided.
Or in the case of Trump, or in the case of Trump, the quicker fucker upper.
Yeah. Bob, I'm going to Iris Demento. I'm not passing on that.
No, you know, you got
to. It's a very small venue. Yeah, I'll be okay with that one.
Rick, yeah. I just wanted to say that I took your recommendation and I saw Alice Cooper.
Oh,
I went and saw it. It was great. I really liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, isn't he entertaining?
Yeah, really good. And then I saw Blondie too, and she's good too, but not as good as Alice. It was really a good show. So.
The thing with Alice is he's a real showman. So you get like an actor. It's like he's like a freaking actor. He could have been an actor if he wanted to be. That's probably why he hung out with who do you play golf with? One of the Marx Brothers.
He's an incredible golfer.
Yeah. Yeah, he used to play with Groucho Marx. Golf.
Sure, so, it wasn't Richard.
What's that?
I mean, Groucho's been dead a while.
Well, that's what I heard. Heard it was Groucho.
I mean, Richard is his grandson.
Oh, well, Alice is like 70, so I don't know.
Well,
maybe
Alice would have
been 70 by now.
I mean, okay. I mean, if you look at, I don't, maybe when he was 25 or something.
Could be, yeah.
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 Hey, Rick, this is one for you to chime in on before you get back to working on your brief. I just had a note from Mike in Cascadia. I get into it, let me note that it's 14 minutes before the hour, and we have $375 to go to finish fundraising this evening in order to have a Keep the Horn on the Air, no kidding, Friday on the Front Porch miracle, okay? $375 to go, and, you know, because, well... There's a bill outstanding out there waiting to be. Well, you don't have to jump in, Rick. You do a lot of that.
No, it's okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to issue a challenge. I'm broke, but I'm giving $20 anyway challenge. And I'll double it if somebody else can match that.
Whoa.
So I'll put in 40.
So somebody needs to kick in 20 to see Rick do 40. Man, I don't want you to hurt yourself.
No, that's okay.
That is never the goal here.
Plenty of credit, Bob. Not to worry.
That sounds like
Hey Rick, I'll kick in another 20. I just got paid. I just got a new job. I've been working for 4 weeks now, and then
good for you.
What it means to be broke. Catch that 20.
Awesome. What's your new job?
Oh, I work for a company called Blunt International.
Oh, okay.
Milwaukee, Oregon, and I'm an SAP guy, so I worked for Chase for a really long time, and then I moved out here and, you know, didn't have a job lined up. I got sacked by Chase, and then I was out of work for about 4 months, but I love it there.
Good.
I love my new job, so.
Good for you.
Now I have money again, so, yeah, I'll throw in another 20.
Well, thanks a ton. So, let's see, that takes us down to 315. So let me jump in here because I wish Steve was here to play with us too. Because Mike in Cascadia just sent an email. Roe versus Wade to Griswold versus Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Queen to Queens level 3. I added that part for the obligatory Star Trek reference.
There you go.
Hey Bob, I'm mowing and listening. Oh, and I have to add as a as an aside, there was a little flurry the other night of mentions of Dr. Bronner's and Kirk's Castile soap.
Mm.
And as soon as I can, I'm going to order some. But it was amazing the number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation that wrote in and said, "Oh, it's the only soap that exists."
I've heard of it.
So yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's just amazing to see the way that it's amazing to see the way that this community, even without knowing it, is of like mind and like spirit. So I gotta get me some Kirks and some Dr. Bronner's. But anyway, Mike in Cascadia says, this is a change of subject for Friday on the Front Porch. Can you explain how the demise of Roe versus Wade leads to the dissolution of privacy with Griswold? Thanks, Bob. Mike in Cascadia.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. I wrote
it's kind of the reverse, though, isn't it?
No, it's
Griswold establishes the right to privacy, and Roe builds on Griswold.
Yeah, Roe builds on Griswold, but Griswold is a linchpin of Roe. So if you knock Roe out, then Griswold becomes vulnerable, and that's where this whole thing about these abortifacient drugs come into play. These you know, religious freaks, a lot of them right wing Catholics, I must say. You know, they basically are against birth control because they look at that as abortion, because it prevents, it technically does not cause an abortion because it prevents a egg from being fertilized by a sperm, or at least it prevents attachment of the fertilized egg to the uterine wall.
Right.
And thereby it prevents a pregnancy from occurring. And so they're calling that abortifacient drugs. And this debate, that term came into play when they were, I think, debating the partial birth abortion crap, you know, several years ago, you know, during the reign of error. And so these guys aren't going to be content to just get rid of Roe versus Wade, because, you know, the way to get rid of, you know, same-sex marriage and things of that nature is to get rid of Griswold. And, you know, they want the government, you know, in your hoo-has. They don't really, you know, they're for small government, except when it comes to being in your private parts.
Well, let's extend that. They want the government in women's vaginas, and they want and they want the government in people's mouths. They want the government on people's tongues. They want government in people's bedrooms. They want government. They want government in people's sex lives, these small government Republicans.
Yeah,
because Obergefell Falls, Bowers versus Hardwick, Lamar versus Texas.
Oh, okay.
Because Bowers upheld a sodomy statute.
Right.
Lamar struck it down.
What about Lawrence versus Texas? Was that
Lawrence, not Lamar. I was thinking of Silent R. Lamar.
Interestingly, when I was in law school, I wrote a paper on the right to privacy, and I traced its genesis from Griswold to Roe to Lawrence versus Texas. And actually, that was the law of the land when I was in law school in the mid-80s. It wasn't until later that, Bowers versus Hardwick reversed the upholding of the Texas ban on sodomy Fat Dead Tony wrote, I think, in Lawrence versus Texas.
See, I thought it was backwards. I thought Fat Dead Tony wrote Bowers versus Hardwick, and Bowers versus Hardwick upheld a Georgia sodomy statute, and Lawrence versus Texas struck it down.
Oh, actually, you're right, I think. I think you're right, yeah, okay. I get them confused. Yeah.
The framers didn't put, and you know, one of the things that you'll often hear right wingers say is, you know, Roe was just written terribly.
Yeah.
That's one of their little choruses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was written the way it was because they were cobbling together a coalition.
Right. Right.
And things that are built by committee, well, you know, it's been said that the platypus is
they don't work so well. Just look at Justice O'Connor's undue burden test with regard to interfering with women's right to an abortion.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, that's a very difficult standard to apply. And that was a 5-4 decision.
But the problem arises in the fact that the framers, This is one of those places where they didn't think they had to do anything.
Yeah.
Because the idea that a government that had already been prevented via the Fourth Amendment from engaging in warrantless searches and seizures would come blowing through the door over who was zooming who. Hi, Aretha.
Yeah.
was crazy to them. Right. And on top of that, they had a considerably more immediate history of theocratic government, for instance, in Massachusetts, where they did do that sort of thing, and they'd lived through the experiment, and no, we're not going to... And they thought they had that genie stuffed in the bottle and right. then firmly corked.
Right, right.
But because they did not include a specific right to privacy outside the statement in the Fourth Amendment that a person has the right to be secure in his person, papers, and effects, and Jesus Christ, if the right to be secure in your person isn't a right to privacy, I don't know what the fuck is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know why the Roe Court had to refer to that as a penumbra right, essentially.
Right, but that's what I was getting to. They said it was a penumbral right. Mm-hmm. That it was a right that existed because of the operation of all the other rights.
Right. Instead of saying it's in the Fourth Amendment.
And Griswold is predicated... Griswold is a case about a woman's access to contraception, the pill.
I think that's a due process case, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it is.
It interfered... The denial of the right to have contraceptions interfered with the right to due process of law, which is kind of strange, you know?
Right. Well, and it's a classic case, and I hate to say it, and don't take me the wrong way, but it's one of those... it's one of those bromides they hand you on the first day of 1L.
Okay.
Hard cases make bad law. You've heard that, right?
All the time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got to come up with a solution. You've got a culture that's boiling. And
Lost you there, Bob.
You've got to come up with a solution because you've got a culture that's boiling.
Yeah.
You've got a burgeoning women's rights movement, and you can't just pretend that a woman's rights don't exist and that they are not somewhat different from the rights of the man, because carry a fetus.
What did we have the women's rights movement of the 70s for then, you know? Right?
Right.
Led by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in large part, and others, obviously. But she was brilliant in her arguments to the Supreme Court. I listened to the Did you see the RBG movie on CNN?
I did not. But I know some of the history. But she is brilliant in her own right. And the thing is, when she was confirmed, there was none of this bullshit of hiding behind. You know, she was asked about Roe, and she said, essentially, if women don't have specific rights to reproductive choice, nobody has any rights.
Right, right.
Because it's not just a constitutional right, it's an existential right.
There you go, yeah.
But what happens, it is Griswold that they want.
Right, they do.
Because they do. Griswold is the linchpin by acknowledging a constitutional right to privacy. Griswold sets up every social issue that the white wing has been having kittens with crocheted tails over for a couple of generations now, with the possible exception of Pryor and Skews. That's right. Not touched. I mean, they still got that.
Right.
But you know, the right to marry. If you can get rid of Griswold, you can get rid of Obergefell.
You could get rid of Loving versus
you
Virginia.
You can get rid of the laws.
Or I should say, you could bring them back.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and what happens is if they go after Roe,
mm-hmm.
there's no way that they're going to leave the Griswold language that Roe relied upon in place, because if they do. It becomes almost impossible to strike down Roe. If you leave that privacy language in place, you can't mm-hmm. do anything to Roe. Except to make that stupid libertarian argument about, well, it needs to be left up to individual states.
Yeah. States.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. All my ignorant white wingers are always, cracker ass rednecks. But, well. Kind of that way, isn't it?
Well, you know, states' rights is the same kind of rationale behind the Reich decision, which basically upheld a federal criminal ban on the use of marijuana, even though the state allowed it, you know? It's like it's states' rights only if we agree with the state law, basically, when you get to, you know, right wingers, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, so, Mike, as you mow, if you still have questions, feel free to shoot another email this way. And I have good news to announce. We have knocked it all the way down to $250 to go, thanks to Les, and thanks to Gary, and thanks to Darlene, and thanks to Christopher. Darlene kicked in the extra 20 for your challenge too, Rick. So that takes us down to 250 to go, and maybe it's reachable in the next 1 hour.
I'd say it is, Bob. We've raised $200 in a half, 20 minutes before, I think.
Yeah, so that's 10 people at $25. And,
cool.
And we have a genuine, no kidding, Friday on the Front Porch miracle that makes sure that we've got a program come Monday.
Save the horn from the hurricane. That's what we
I don't want to do that because that minimizes the horror that people are going through. And I don't ever want to be any part of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is one of those moments when I wish that I was just independently wealthy and could run this all on my own hook and not even be fundraising during a natural disaster. I apologize for that.
Yeah.
But trust me, the power goes out here, it'll be a natural disaster of its own sort.
I gotcha. Well, I'm going to just listen in for a while, Bob. I'm going to try to get a little work back in, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you for all your input. Rick. By the way, help Mike. It helped immensely. Thank you.
You bet.
I got a note in from Brother Deacon Asa. Warning: bring a hockey puck and lots of duct tape when you go shopping for Dr. Bronner's, because like the owners of the In-N-Out Burger, Dr. Bronner puts his religious maniac text on the soap bottles. So, too, it's okay soap, but it clogs like a motherfucker. You have to blow out the nozzle every 2 soap squirts. I had no idea, but I'll still get it.
Another good product ruined by religion. Thanks.
Yeah. Well,
tell us what to buy, Bob. Stop telling us what to buy.
Stop telling us how to squirt Dr. Bronner's, Asa. and you and all the others, anywhere they are, stay the away from In-N-Out Burger and their $25,000 contribution to the California Republican Party.
That's nothing. I'm not too worried about that. But I'll think about that.
Basically dead.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Something's cutting in and out. It may just be me.
I think it's me.
No, it's everybody. I've heard Bob cut out. I heard John Brenneville cut out. I think it might be the new Skype interface.
Hey, well, it's Microsoft fucking up Skype. Yes.
Yeah.
Sparky loves it.
Because
I'm running the old Skype still. They haven't taken it away from my 2 machines.
Hang on as long as you can, because, of course, if Microsoft, you know, they could fuck up a 1-car parade, so.
They're going to have to pry it from Sparky's cold, dead hands.
Yeah, I'm beating them off every time they try to get me an upgrade.
Hey, Sparky, don't say you're beating anybody off, okay? I mean,
yeah, they could fuck up a cup of coffee, couldn't they, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm X-ing them out, clicking them off.
Okay.
No, I keep going, no, I do not want to upgrade. Not now.
Not. Oh, hey! I just noticed that we do have Steve from New York to engage in the legal eagleism here.
Nice.
Yay!
Hey, Steve.
I want to ask Steve Hello? About the Stormy Daniels that case, where I guess is it true that Michael Cohen and Trumpster, they both dropped their non-disclosure agreement, like they waived it? Isn't that what I heard?
To be honest with you, I don't know.
Yeah, they did. I saw that story. And because they were trying to make the Stormy Daniels case go away because it had turned into such a giant headache.
Okay. I just I just saw breaking news that the special counsel is might be in, indicting Greg Craig, who was White House counsel under Obama.
Oh.
Mueller?
Yeah.
What, was he mixed up in the Ukrainian business too?
That's kind of, I think he had some sort of connection to Manafort.
So I think he might have been Manafort's first counsel.
Yeah. Prosecutors weigh charges against Dem power broker and Manafort linked probe.
Now that's gonna be a tough fight for Mueller. Maybe he will go after Hillary after all.
Well, I think in one sense it inoculates him from the they're only going after Republicans thing, because I mean this was Obama's White House counsel.
That'd be big. He's a major player in D.C.
And they're also going to he was a partner at Skadden Arps, and they're going to go after Skadden too.
They were a big Trump firm, weren't they? Skadden?
I'm not sure. Skadden is like that's like one of the biggies, or supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of Big Law. I think Big Law is nothing more than a billing mill. I don't think they actually provide much in the way.
It's a pyramid scheme. It's a legal pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
Well, basically, it's a way to print your own money.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I go back to when I watched, and of course, you know, we're a lot of years out now, so now they're fabulously wealthy and everything. But I go back to when I made different decisions when I got out of law school. But
you can go up to the next.
A lot of my classmates took the $70,000 a year job with a silk stocking firm that required them to put in more billable hours than there are in an average year. And so they were at work at 6 o'clock every morning. They didn't leave home till leave work till 9 o'clock at night. And they were even in on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, they got to come in at noon and work till six and things like it.
Yeah.
And the payoff is that 15, 20 years down the road, somebody else is doing that, and you're sitting back and racking and depositing the checks based on their work. And that's kind of the nature of a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. And frankly, at Big Law, you don't learn how to be a lawyer.
No, you learn how to carry briefcases.
Yeah, and build time. I mean, I have a friend of mine, actually my new partner, he has gone up against Big Law partners who you have litigation partners at big law firms who've never done a deposition. Who's going through the checkout line?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody's at the grocery store.
Sorry, I thought I had you on mute. That's me. My bad.
Oh, okay.
We get some of the most interesting sound effects on this program between Steve's New York street scenes and bar scenes and Tracy's cab stuff and
going to stores. I love it.
Hey, Tracy.
Yeah, and the occasional spray of gunfire, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, there's nothing unusual about that, Bob. Not in this country.
No.
Sadly, you're quite correct.
Since I just left the ATM, Bob, I'm going to throw $20 into a $20 challenge. You know, call her to Tracy just left the ATM and she still has money in the bank.
Thank you, Tracy. So somebody pony up $20 and Tracy matches it, and that takes us down to 210. Well, and we draw ever closer to getting the bills paid.
I just wanted to chime in real quick after our we had a pretty good election last night here in New York.
Yeah.
I am in. I don't know anybody knows much about the IDC, the Independent Democratic Coalition. My state senator was the guy who was the head of it, and he went up against a fairly young woman. And I was at my local bar where I talk about going is where the victory party was, and she trounced him by at least 10, 12 points.
And isn't the IDC the bunch of mugwumps who made it possible for the Republicans to control the...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And 6 of 8 of them lost their primary last night.
You had a primary on a Thursday?
Yeah, well...
I thought primaries was on Tuesdays.
The reason...
On Tuesdays, woo!
It's a New York state of mind, Tracy.
No, wait. It's because Rosh Hashanah fell on Tuesday.
Okay,
by state law, it has to be, okay. I think it's 2 days later or something like that.
Okay, cool. I got you.
And I saw Alexandria Ocasio, I always forget her name.
Cortez.
She was at the thing last night. It's funny. She walked in. She's like, she must not be 5 foot tall, 5 feet tall. And the bouncer carted her, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, Bub, you won't be doing that twice.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing was, that was like the race last night because the speaker of the council was there, the comptroller of the city was there, and she beat the shit out of the guy, which was great. The guy, and I, if I'm not mistaken, on the state senate race, my old state or soon to be old state senator spent like $2 million. He had an incredibly large war chest.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
On a state senate race.
Yeah.
That pays how much per year?
I have no idea. Probably not $50,000 a year.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, oops, he didn't get his money's worth.
Yeah.
Hey, Tracy.
Well, he was there for like 10 or 12 years. So.
Tracy, your challenge got met.
Awesome.
And we have Charlene to thank for that, who jumped in again. Thank you, Charlene. You are just awesome beyond words. Thank you so much. So, Steve, did you? You might be interested to know. I just had a note from Ralphs, who also goes a long way. Well, you all go a long way to keep this all afloat. Ralphs is the sponsor of the Trash Fits Walker Stand End of the Month Challenge that we have met for 8 consecutive months.
Awesome.
And so we're working on month number 9 now. Ralphs, subject line Manafort, from Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. She's writing that the Manafort deal is pardon proof.
Ooh. That's awesome.
I have to actually read it. I don't know to what extent. Oh, well, no, here's why I think it may be pardon proof, because even if they pardon him, he's still obligated to cooperate.
You want to flesh that out a little bit?
Well, I haven't read the thing, but the way I understand it, what it really boils down to is it's more of a cooperative deal slash almost contract with the special prosecutor than it is a plea deal. Again, I'll have to look over it for sure, but I think that's what it boils down to. Because when I first heard about it, that's actually the first thought that went through my mind is, why? I mean, so he's not guilty. Big deal. And I suspect there's probably something hidden there that says we're going to charge you under New York state law, because a lot of this stuff was money laundering, et cetera, within the state.
Right, and it doubles over.
Yeah. Although, and this seems to have gotten come out of the news, is that may extend a president's pardon automatically to state crimes. And the reason I say that is because when Eric Schneiderman was attorney general before he resigned, I remember reading in the news that he was pushing a law to change the New York pardon law regarding something with a federal pardon. So, I mean, I need to look into that, but I think there's something, unless I'm wrong, but I think there's something that's along those lines. I hope not, but I think there might be. I mean, it's funny. New York, for all of its progressive, quote-unquote, bona fides and reputation, in many ways is a rather, I won't say conservative, but corrupt and establishment focused state. I mean, certainly our state Senate and the way state government runs is pretty damn corrupt.
Very similar to
Illinois. Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up the fact that the primary was on Thursday because of Rosh Hashanah. How is that not an impermissible establishment of religion?
Maybe it is.
By the way, I think I got a cowbell for Beth in Texas. She posted the story of the Manafort plea. I plead guilty, and this is the pull quote from the Washington Post story. I plead guilty, Manafort told U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson at a hearing Friday morning in federal court in the district. As part of his plea, Manafort admitted to years of financial crimes to hide his money from the IRS and promised to tell the government about, quote, his participation in and knowledge of all criminal activities. Beth then noting, hurricane season indeed. Pauly Walnuts just made landfall in D.C. as a Cat 5.
You know what? I think I know why it may not, why it may be pardon proof. Because the consideration is not the plea. The consideration is he had to pay $45 million. And that maybe that's what the consideration here is. I don't have any idea.
Can you be pardoned from a civil judgment?
It's not a crime. What does the pardon power say? Does it say all crimes committed under all crimes committed? But again, it's not a, it's just like you enter into a contract and you pay money for entering into the contract. I don't know. I'm spitballing here because I haven't looked at
it. I know. And I mean, I'm in that same place. Just guessing, but you know what, I don't know if you heard, but what I was talking with Rick about is, can you contract away via your plea agreement your willingness to accept a pardon?
Can you actually not accept a pardon?
Yes. Yes, you can refuse a pardon.
I guess if you maintain your innocence, if you refuse to say, yeah, I'm guilty, then you don't get a pardon if you don't sign or if you don't agree that you're guilty.
I mean, one of the things, if you go back to the history of Watergate, was that Nixon was somewhat resistant to accepting a pardon.
Mm-hmm.
But along comes the next question, the future crimes question: can you be pardoned for crimes that you have not yet committed?
Isn't that what Ford did, though?
Well, that's why the question is. Theoretically, Ford pardoned Nixon for crimes with which he had not yet been charged, which is different from pardoning him for crimes which he had not yet committed.
I mean, why didn't anybody ever challenge him on that?
Because our long national nightmare was over.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yep. I mean...
Well, there's no precedent set for that. There needs to be.
All of this is ad hoc ground. So, yeah. I was going to ask you, Steve, as far as New York is concerned, what about the AG race?
It's interesting. I've read some stuff about Letitia James, and it's interesting. And what I found a bit on the interesting side was, and I remember when she was first. We have a position in New York City called the Public Advocate, which is essentially supposed to be an ombudsman. And generally, in the past, I've always found it to be kind of didn't have a whole lot of power or money. And as I recall, de Blasio actually gave sought more money for it, and she actually, I just saw a statistic, she brought more lawsuits against us in her tenure there than the previous three did in the prior 20 years combined. The issue with her is she took Cuomo's endorsement in exchange. One of the things that she refused to do was to take the Working Family Party's endorsement. And if it would, New York's kind of weird. You can actually run on the ticket for multiple parties. And typically what happens is, and it's been less and less in the last few years, is that whoever the Democrat was also ran on the Working Family Party's ticket. And then whoever the Conservative Party ran on that ticket. So that when you look down on a ballot, you saw the same person under multiple parties. In this instance, the Working Families Party endorsed Teach Out because she, and I don't remember the specifics, but she laid out a fairly aggressive Trump and to go after Wall Street. Tish James, you know, I've heard a number of concerns, and a lot of my news regarding New York politics I get from Sam Cedar because, you know, he lives here too. And he made the, that's how I did. I mean, he knows more about it because he, you know, his job is to know those things. I have other things to worry about, like paying my goddamn bills, which I know I've said it before, I'll say it again. That's why I've been kind of silent on the support and the horn here lately, is I just haven't been able to. But you know, we'll wait and see. Here's what I think the big take from this is number one, Cynthia Nixon, I think, moved a lot of people to the left, she moved the narrative to the left. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, one or two of the people who beat the members of the IDC credited her with doing so. And her getting in the race highlighted Cuomo's exceedingly moderate governing over the past several years. And I think that's the biggest thing that I think the IDC, the defeat of the IDC was, well, or two-thirds of them, was that, or three-fourths of them, yeah, three-fourths of them, was that it signaled a leftward tilt within the state Senate in particular. But also remember that you have Ocasio-Cortez, who won up here and beat Joe Crowley. There's definitely something going on out here in the hinterlands, I think. And yes, I'll call New York a hinterland. But I don't hear anybody. Is anyone? Am I by myself?
No, we're listening.
Oh. No, we're all ears, brother.
Okay. I'll tell you that when I walked out of the voting booth yesterday, that I had four people I could actually vote for. I voted for Nixon. I voted for Teach Out. I voted for Biagi, who was the state Senate candidate. And I voted for Jamani Williams, who ran for lieutenant governor. The interesting thing, one of the most interesting things that I saw was that, you know, Cuomo won by, I think, was 65% of the vote. He had run with, her name was Kathy Hochul, I think, H-O-C-U-L. It's not really on a ticket so much because they kind of run together, but it's not a ticket because each office runs separately. But whereas he won 65-35, the one he ran with, I think she ended up winning 52-48 or 51-49. And what that tells me is Cuomo won an awful lot of votes because of name recognition and the devil I know. And there was probably some sexism and homophobia in there against voting for Cynthia Nixon. Whereas everything else was a lot closer. And then
Steve, can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
One, do you see Cynthia Nixon as, I guess, Jill Steining the New York race?
No. I think she's a dedicated Democrat.
Well, no. I'm not talking about, you know, going green or anything, but she'll still be on the Working Families Party ticket, right, in November?
I think the jury is out. But look, the bottom line is the Working Families Party by itself is not going to sway a race.
You don't think it can provide enough space to put to make a Republican to you know.
No.
To do, you know, to pull a 2016, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't think nobody knows who the hell the Republican is. And I mean, I suspect that she's smart enough to say, look, I will, if that would cause a Trumpansy to possibly occupy the governor's mansion, she wouldn't do it. And it may very well be in that instance that the working families may just not endorse anybody. And it may be a blank line on the ballot. But
the endorsement coming into the primary doesn't carry over into the general?
No, I don't believe. I mean, coming from Ohio and living in D.C., it's much more straightforward. New York is, for lack of a better term, fucked up. And I'll say two other things about the governor's race is I heard a number of people saying that they were leery of electing a person who had celebrity. So I think that was a significant thing working against her.
Call it the Trump factor, the inexperience into government. The idea of somebody with absolutely no experience whatsoever suddenly catapulting to the head of a government.
Right. She did bring up the IDC, and apparently that IDC had very little name recognition throughout the state. And since she got in the race, that was what I had heard as people who ran against the IDC senators was that was one of the biggest reasons that people voted for the challengers was because they knew who it was and that people were like, well, wait a second, we don't want that.
Well, were the IDC candidates, Steve, otherwise in safe districts?
I mean, since most of them had been there a number of years, what is a safe district? I mean, certainly the guy who was in my district, his name's Jeff Klein. The part of the Bronx that I live in is a pretty affluent area. Ethnically, I guess I'll say it's a very Jewish area. And I don't mean to say that Jewish folks vote as a block, but Klein was there. Klein belonged to a shul in the district. So I think that carried weight with an awful lot of people. So, but one other thing was, and again, Sam pointed this out this morning, is that Cynthia Nixon got well over 500,000 votes. Andrew Cuomo got close to 1 million. And while if you think of the population of New York State, that's really not that much.
That's a craptastic turnout, isn't it?
Well, here's the deal. When he last ran in the primary, he only got, as the winner, 350,000 votes. So,
that's pathetic. That's a pathetic turnout.
Yeah, so this time, I mean, at least as it related to last time, the turnout was way up. So, I mean, that's encouraging to me. And the other thing, too, is that I've been very skeptical of this whole blue wave, not because I think people aren't genuinely preferring a Democrat or people aren't genuinely anti-Trump, but I just find that the Democrats always have a way of snatching victory defeat from the jaws of victory. And I think Charles Schumer is probably one of the most incompetent Senate minority or party leaders that ever occupy that office. I think he's a dullard.
Well, we're Democrats. If we can find somebody that will not be effective, Harry Reid's a goddamn fighter compared to
Kavanaugh.
Schumer.
That pisses me off, man.
Well, and look, Steve, I'm glad you raised that. I would like for us and jump in as you wish. I'd like for us to address the Kavanaugh revelation. And I'll kind of let me send out thanks. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Texas T. We are now down to 230 to go. That's huge and helpful and hopeful. So hopefully in the next 30 minutes we'll bring in 23 people with $10. We'll go, hey, let's keep the horn on the air some more.
Right.
But this, the business, here's where I come from. So there's a revelation that a woman wrote to her member of the House of Representatives, Anna Eshoo, detailing a forced sexual encounter with Brett Kavanaugh some 30 years ago when they were both in high school. And she said there was a witness to it, another guy, a classmate of Brett Kavanaugh's. And, of course, Brett Kavanaugh went to an all-boys Catholic high school. So she was from somewhere else. This morning, and Dianne Feinstein apparently handled this atrociously, because she was even putting off the members of her own committee on her own in her own caucus. And this is, of course, the same committee, and at least one of the same Republicans who smeared and slimed and filthed all over Anita Hill. So you've got a woman with arguably a credible allegation of sexual misconduct against a Supreme Court nominee, and she doesn't want to come forward and she does not want to make her allegation public. Is it any wonder why?
No, but it's not. It's absolutely not a number wonder why, because any woman that brings out any kind of allegations smeared, like you said, not only that, but you're looking at the Republican Party. I thought as to I'm down here, because states like this have absolutely insane fucking rules against directly affecting women, and the road all the way through Georgia, all XXX adult stuff, and then right behind it they have no abortion, save the baby's life. And then behind that they have bad web.com site for a man.
Hey, Jules, you might want to try reconnecting. You're breaking up all over the place.
Yeah, so, I can't hear a word she's saying, Bob.
I want to hear what you've got to say, but
I thought it was me.
No, it's every third word.
Yep.
Can I say something about that? I think that's absolutely true. But you know, as I sit here and think about it, I think, you know, I can't speak for other Western countries, but I think this country has an issue with sexual assault in general. Because I suspect that the same thing that would prevent there, or that prevents women from coming forward, is the same notion of why families who were Catholic, who had children, who, you know, whom priests abused, didn't want to come forward because there's a power dynamic and they were afraid of being taken through the mud. You know, with women, it's, well, you must have asked for it because of how you're dressed. With men, or we'll say men, insofar as it concerns the church, I think it had a lot to do with a priest would never do something like that. So there is a propensity to believe, to not believe a victim. But like you said, Bob, in either case, is there any wonder? Is there any wonder that people don't come forward?
Well, what happens is you're re-victimized if you're not believed, if the allegation is not believed.
Right.
So no wonder why you don't want to be.
Here's where it gets.
Look what happened to Anita Hill. You know.
And nasty old.
Most people are re-victimized.
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes. Anytime someone who has survived an assault comes forward, they have got to go through harassment and undocumented claims against them, even if they have documentation of their claims. They are drugged through the mud and they are treated like vermin. When I was in high school, I had been sexually molested for a very long time. And when it came out, I was put on trial, it felt like, by the police department. I sat in a police room for hours and hours being cross-examined by an officer. I was the one who had been molested for through this. The person who was guilty, he got away scot-free. Not a goddamn charge against him.
And sadly, that is more the rule than the exception.
It is.
One thing I'd like to point out, though, is that after crying great big crocodile tears about, oh, this isn't fair, poor Judge Kavanaugh, I'd like for us to consider one thing. They were ready today with a list of 65 women who said, my goodness me, Brett Kavanaugh, that lovely, lovely Brett Kavanaugh, he never raped me. Now, how do you have a list of 65 women from 30 years ago who will say Brett Kavanaugh never raped me in the space of less than 24 hours?
Because they already had it prepared. They were
because they already knew about it.
Yep.
Which no begs question. The question, how did they know? We have two, let's consult Mr. Occam or Ms. Occam, whoever it was, for a second here. There's two ways they could have known. They had the allegation beforehand, aside and apart from Anna Eschew's office, or from the complaint made to Anna Eschew's office, or two, DiFi said it to them.
Well, Feinstein said that she had referred it to the appropriate authorities, and it had been placed in his FBI file.
Yesterday.
Fuck Feinstein.
But when? Yeah.
Yesterday. She did it yesterday.
Well, I mean, that's what. Okay, so here's question number. I just want to get the totality of the picture. Did you happen to notice that all the online and TV ads that have been run for Kavanaugh have featured women?
And he had his daughters there behind him.
I just think he's a wonderful, you know, I'm a teacher, and I never would have thought about getting into politics. And goodness me, I just know him as a human being, and I just think he'd be such a wonderful, wonderful Supreme Court judge. And see, I got, you know, and I'm just saying, and I don't know nothing about judging no cases.
And he's the first appellate judge who's had all women law clerks as well.
Yeah.
It's almost like he went out of the way to inoculize himself and
yes.
actually himself against
yes.
sex perfectly abuse
said,
women.
Perfectly said.
It's like it was choreographed.
But he spilled the beans for someone in advance. Oops, I'm sorry.
Doesn't this harken back to Thomas? I remember the parade of women going up doing the same thing for Thomas at his hearings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. You want to know how the Republicans knew it? Kavanaugh told them.
That's what I said. He spilled the beans.
It's in the documents that haven't been released.
No, but he, you know, when they vetted him in a double damn quick hurry. Remember, he wasn't originally on the maggot short list for an appointment. He only made the short list when it became clear that Trump would need a Supreme Court justice who could rule that the president can't be bothered with all of that silliness of being criminally responsible or even investigated. So when they sat down to vet him, they said, everything, Brett, everything. See, the Republicans know a shit more about, load more about Brett Kavanaugh than we do.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why they're hiding so much of it.
And trying to cover it up in advance.
And they weren't going to make another Judge Roy Moore mistake. I'm sorry to interrupt, Jules. Sorry about that.
I was just saying, that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to be proactive in covering up his flaws because, like Bob said, they sat him down and they said, you tell us every fucking thing that you've done. And we will fix it for you. And that's exactly what they're trying to do.
And we'll craft an advertising campaign to show how great you are with women.
Exactly.
However, commercials. It's all going to come out, and that could create a potential impeachment process further down the road. But they probably know that the Democrats don't have the balls to go through the process.
Well, and then, well, I mean, let's
you can't remove them. You need 67 votes to remove them. Impeachment does you nothing if you can't remove the turkey. Yeah,
exactly. And let's, you know, let's remember, this is, I mean, Steve, tell me if I'm wrong. Rick, tell me if I'm wrong. Trying a 30-year-old case is no walk in the park.
That's true. That's an old case.
Yes. On the other hand, trying a case that's 2 weeks old of fucking perjury, is another kettle of fish altogether.
Right.
But you have to have someone willing to try the perjury case.
You have to have people willing to listen.
By the way, Darlene in Connecticut says, all the lily white women surrounding Kavanaugh are window dressing. He's engaged in shameless self-promotion from the get-go to get on the Supreme Court. He's using them. Darlene also noting it will be interesting to see if more women might come forward against him. See, one of the great shames of Joe Biden's life is that when he was chairman of the Judiciary Committee during the Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas hearings, was that there were three women who were willing to come forward and directly corroborate Anita Hill's story. And Joe did not bring them in because of what had been done to Anita Hill. He later said that was one of the great regrets of his life.
That's a common theme we hear from Democrats back in that era, right? Hillary with the super predator comment, Bill signing the repealing the Glass-Steagall Act,
welfare reform, telecommunications act, and Bill Clinton's presidency is one long series of regrets. But you know,
oh yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, tough to start,
Can I? And I'm not one to defend those actions, but I have a feeling the one thing that Thomas said may have inoculated or may have forced Biden to not do that. And does anybody remember what
Electronic
Thomas
Electronic lynching.
Said? A high-tech lynching.
High-tech lynching. Yep.
Listen.
He played the black card there.
Yes. Well, he
agreed.
You know what? Here's something that Bob and I, that we've all discussed on here. Republicans, they saw what happened to Roy Moore, and they said, that ain't happening again. Okay, Brett, the rumors are that you've done this, this, and this. Spill the beans. The Democrats, being the incompetent boobs that they are, should have hired you. Everyone knows shit about everybody there. And there's this unwritten, unspoken agreement that what stays in D.C., what happens in D.C. stays in D.C. But there's no reason the Democrats couldn't have hired a private investor. Listen, there's always in politics, always someone willing to talk, particularly for a price. And I guarantee you, if the Democrats would have found this out and surreptitiously leaked it to the press, you know, 5 months ago, we may very well be not talking about Kavanaugh or talking about the possibility of defeating him. They don't play politics well.
The Democrats need.
No, they do not. Not since LBJ.
The problem with you just about Clarence Thomas, like you said about politicking and stuff, the problem with Clarence Thomas claiming high tech lynching and, you know, uppity Negro and all that, it's a slap in the face to black people because he doesn't consider himself black. He, you know, for him to even claim lynching, it's just like, for real, dog?
Well, he's just like OJ that way. You know, right. But OJ's a total coconut.
You know,
but you can say that. You can say that. But you don't think that was intentional?
It was intense.
I remember, it may have been Biden, who said to him the day after Hill testified, "Did you watch it?" And he said, "I didn't watch any of it because it's nothing more than a high-tech lynching." And I suspect that even if Biden was inclined to have these other women in to testify, and again, maybe I'm completely wrong, and please understand, I am not defending him. But I've been around politics enough to know that shit's never what it seems. And maybe I'm wrong, but I only bring this up to illustrate that the Republicans play politics much better than Democrats do.
They sure know how to run.
They're not interested in governing. These are the people who think government's the problem. They're interested in stealing.
They
want to become powerful so they can steal. That's the idea.
Yeah,
that's the name of their game.
That's it.
They want it to fail.
I don't want to defend Biden, but there's a story recently about him giving a homeless man some money and no one was around.
Hey, Erwin, you're kind of cutting out a bit.
The guy's got a big heart, I think, and I'll check out then. Thank you.
Well, it could
be the connection altogether. One thing, Steve, if you could hold just a second, because
sure.
You know, I brought the stress. We got the stress line, and I want to bring it on. I think Scott's with us. Hey, Scott.
Hey, fun lovers, truth seekers. I was a little late to the party today.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Hi. Hey, this thing about Manafort and this thing that Dianne Feinstein was trying to do with the allegation of youthful indiscretion, I get the reference to Anita Hill, okay? But, you've got to know, I mean, the Republicans do learn from errors. And first of all, they don't always make a lot of errors, at least not egregious ones, exploitable ones that the Democrats do. So when after Bush nominated Harriet Myers for a Supreme Court seat, they kind of learned from that experience to do, to exercise due diligence on future Republican nominated Supreme Court nominees. Okay. So you got to figure they left no stone unturned with Kavanaugh, but even if they did know that this bombshell was going to be exploded at some point along the process, their comeback, whenever you call one of their people on something that's eminently callable upon, okay, in the case of Kavanaugh, did I get knocked off?
No, you didn't.
Did. Oh, okay, I heard a weird noise. Okay, anyway, where was I? Where was my guy? Now, the deal with Kavanaugh, I am surprised that one of them or a lot of them haven't stood up and said with a strong, steady voice, well, you've got to remember he was young at the time. This was youthful indiscretion. This was hijinks. You know, because back when Bill Clinton was overseas protesting the Vietnam War, he was all of 19, 20, somewhere in there, on foreign soil, nonetheless. And they sure as hell lost no time bringing up his youthful hijinks. And I'm really surprised that they haven't gone that way with Kavanaugh. Oh, well, tut-tut. You know, he was young then. We're all young once. You know, which is just bullshit. And I haven't been especially happy with how my Democrats have handled this thing. You know, back when it counted, back when they could bring things in the form of questions and documents and stuff during those two or three days that he was up before the Judiciary Committee, simply because there was one instance. God, I can't remember now. Because, you know, there's an onslaught of stuff, but there were things that they could have brought to the public forum that would have maybe given people pause in terms of not the members of the Republican members in the judiciary, but some voters out there who might look at the questioning of something and say, well, you know, she's got a point there. Do we really want this caliber of person about whom we may not know everything there is to know in a lifetime position on the court? And there were a couple of places where the Democrats dropped the ball. So unless something major, I mean, really explosive happens, I don't know that we're not stuck with Kavanaugh being that critical seat on the Supreme Court, and it distresses me greatly. Because as you all were to
well, this is this earlier, Scott. This is an all hands on deck moment
for them. No, it doesn't seem like it is for us.
Well, no, I think I see. I know. God, you know what? 200 people, mostly women, risked arrest during the hearings.
Well, yeah, but you know, you talked about the commercials in support of Kavanaugh, and how there were so many women. The reason there weren't any men, what could a man say on a commercial supporting Kavanaugh? He's a degenerate gambler who doesn't pay his debts. You know, a man wouldn't have much to say in favor of it. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, what I was going to point out though is that the women were put up there as a front. Yes. But secondly, frankly, the Republican power structure couldn't care less about the little fucking fetuses, all right? And in fact, if they can figure out a way to keep abortion marginally legal so that they could keep the little cockroach evangelicals scurrying out from behind the baseboards every couple of years, that's all the better for them. The right wing wants Kavanaugh for a host of other reasons. The man is utterly hostile to environmental regulations. The man is hostile to human rights. The man is hostile to any attempt to keep the president, to hold the president accountable for his otherwise criminal actions. And that, and again, I say what I said the other night, the court meets on October the 1st, and that is the drop dead date. They want him on the court by then because there is shit coming down the pipe that they need his vote on, and he's reliable. One thing that needs to be brought up here, Facebook, for instance, has decided to go into the suppression business. Now, the precious white wing has been, shadow banning, pissing and moaning as usual. But guess what? Guess who's actually getting shadow banned? Facebook lets the Weekly fucking Standard, a miserable right-wing rag that you wouldn't have let Punky shit on for fear of offending Punky. Facebook lets the Weekly Standard fact-check news articles.
Since when have they ever been a fact checker?
Well, I mean, they are now. They recently, let's finish the story.
Okay.
They recently fact checked and suppressed an article from Think Progress about the demonstrable hostility of Brett Kavanaugh to Roe v. Wade. And the Weekly Standard said, well, this will not do. And they suppressed it. Now, who else gets to fact check? Well, PolitiFact gets to fact check.
Snopes?
Snopes gets to fact check. But the only ideological publication that gets to fact check is the Weekly Fucking Standard.
They've got to have somebody on the board.
And no matter how demonstrable the stuff that's Think Progress published, no matter how demonstrably factual it was, the Weekly Standard said and so boom, when it shows up on Facebook pages, there's a notation that says Facebook has determined this post to be false.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's sobering.
I'm not the first person to make this observation, although I've made it before. I see Orwell's 1984, where you got a room full of people, all with a little place where the pneumatic tube pops up to their workstation, and they're cutting stuff out, and they're adding stuff in, and information is just decimated. The reliability of information is decimated if you have access to it. Now you can't even get access to a broad spectrum of information.
It's really scary. Crazy. And yeah, net neutrality. I don't know. I mean, if we don't win this election, net neutrality is going to go the way of the dinosaur. I mean, California, it seems they've saved it in California. But,
yes.
But that's going to only hold so long.
Well, I mean, the federal government, the FCC can say that can argue in the Supreme Court or through the court system that California's action is illegal because the FCC has jurisdiction and that California doesn't. We are rapidly running out of time. Let me throw a couple of things out there. One, we've still got $230 to go in fundraising, and not to put too fine a point on it, but there's never been a moment. Well, there was a moment last month, and we managed to keep the program on the air, sitting on the razor's edge. Well, we're back on the razor's edge again, and we need to raise that last $230. 23 people at $10, et cetera. 10 at 23. And the button is at headon.live. Now,
Bob, I did want to close with a positive note.
Well, please wait, Scott, because
okay, I will.
I've got one more bit of madness here that may very well eat up the remainder of the program and send us screaming into the night. via Talking Points memo, FEMA, which recently was raided for $10 million to support kidnapping children. FEMA is going to send out an emergency alert system test on September the 20th at 2:18 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Okay? This is not fake news. This test, and those of us of a certain age remember the emergency broadcast, the EBS test. This is a test. This is only a test. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. If this were an actual emergency, you would be directed where to tune for emergency information. This is only a test. And those of us who worked in radio stations, you had to log it, and it would trigger, and you're like, beep, and then it was over, and that got changed to the emergency alert system. Well, nobody listens to the radio anymore, and everybody's got a computer in their pocket. So, here's a great idea. Let's send an emergency alert system test to every cell phone in the United States of America. And in the event of an actual emergency, the person who will be communicating with you will be, wait for it, the President of the United States of America.
Oh, wonderful. Can we, any way to block this alert, Bob?
No, because, this is a tornado is coming. There's a nuclear missiles on the fly. You can't block that any more than a radio station could have blocked the EBS system back in the day. Now, and doesn't that, and so, you know, the we're going to let Donald Trump blow up your phone. Now, does this mean it will be a text from Donald Trump? That's not clear. But they will test the system.
And he's actually going to participate in September 2:18 in the afternoon on what day?
2:18 p.m. on September the 20th, Eastern Time. So that'll be 11:18 p.m., 11:18 a.m. on the West Coast. Caitlin McNeil, writing at TPM, says, basically, this is a reminder that in the event of a national emergency, President Trump will be able to reach all of us via text message.
And conceivably, he can have his little moment of crazy for a captive audience.
And who's got control of triggering it? Oh, my God. Somebody was going to say something?
No, I said that whole idea isn't...
It's crazier in the head. Well, I mean, the idea is not crazy. It's crazy because of the person who happens to be president at the moment.
Yeah.
Doesn't
that cut into his McDonald's or time, or is that KFC time? I can't keep.
No. Well, no. I think I think executive time is over by then. Oh, by the way, this is worth going back to. Darlene in Connecticut says, don't forget, having 60 to 100 women speaking in favor of an alleged sexual abuser didn't help Al Franken. Once again, the double standard working overtime. So, I even had a fun story tucked away, a little bit of a kicker. But I think I'll probably save it for next Friday because it's almost as silly and almost as hilarious as the one and only Shiny Heiny. But we don't have time for it right now.
Oh, no.
So I will thank you all for joining in. Thank you, Scott, for jumping in on the stress line.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you. You too, Steve. Thank you very kindly, my friend.
See you, Steve. See you, everybody.
Rick, thanks for the challenge. Tracy, thanks for the challenge. Thanks, Christopher, for jumping in, answering the challenge. And thanks to everybody who jumped in to push the lupine pest off the porch this evening. Thank you so much. Thanks to Sparky for moderating the biggest part of the evening. Back more on Monday. I hope by then I won't be talking about a $430 fundraising goal. Thanks one and all for all you do to keep the program on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this little program. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.